From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM Split Show for you tonight. In a moment, Whitley Strieber joins us as we talk about UFOs and other mysteries. Later on, the Akashic Records, the history of our cosmos with Mona Wind. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. I'm going to start tonight's program on a sub remote, a very, very sad story. Coast to Coast regular guest Mish Shedlock's wife, Joanne, has passed away. She died of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. We're going to put up a link very shortly on the coasttocoastam.com website for you so you can go and make any donations that you might want. A 4.3 magnitude earthquake rattled eastern Texas early Thursday. The quake was centered near Tipton. That's about 155 miles east-southeast of Dallas. At least one building in Tipton showed damage, with a number of bricks falling to the street. That was about it, though. NASA's Kepler Space Telescope has provided fresh insight on the colossal explosions that can afflict some stars. These enormous releases of magnetic energy, known as superflares, could damage the atmosphere of a nearby orbiting planet, putting at risk any life forms that might reside there. Sounds like Earth, doesn't it? As for us, an M5 flare hitting us launched yesterday from the sun. About 4,700 asteroids are close enough and big enough to pose a risk to Earth, says NASA, after studying data beamed back from an orbiting telescope. The figure, give or take 1,500 of them, is how many space rocks bigger than 330 feet across are believed to come within 5 million miles of planet Earth. Daniel Durda, planetary scientist, experts on asteroids with us. Well, we're getting these numbers down to a science now, Daniel, aren't we?
Hi, George. Yes, we sure are. We kind of had that number roughly in mind before already, based on our telescopic observations from here on the surface of the Earth, but the WISE spacecraft did a much better statistical sampling. Even though the number is pretty much the same as we thought we knew already, it gives us more confidence that that's really the right number.
Daniel, if someone were to come up to you and bet about the possibilities of us, probability, getting hit by an asteroid, would you take that bet, and what odds?
Well, I guess it all depends on what size object and what the time frame. If you're telling me we're going to be hit by a dinosaur-killing asteroid tomorrow, I would never take that bet, because the odds are so slim, they're astronomically against that. But if you tell me that sometime within the next year something the size of a small office building is going to hit us, then I'd say almost certainly that's probably going to happen.
Okay, and if a small office building-size asteroid hit on land in a city, what kind of damage?
There we're talking about something the equivalent of the blast of a significant nuclear weapon going off over your city. No radiation, of course, but that concussive air blast is enough to blow out windows, and it's definitely not a good day.
So a pretty good sized crater.
Probably no crater, actually. An office-sized building, that object is going to really significantly break apart. You'll probably get a pelting of stones and gravel and maybe a few larger chunks on the ground, but that object's probably going to break apart as it belly flops into the atmosphere way above your city. It'll blast your city. It'll knock a bunch of stuff down and break windows, but you probably won't get a crater for something about that size.
Okay, Dan, thanks for the update. 4,700 asteroids so far identified by NASA as being a potential risk to good old planet Earth. Thousands of heart attacks and strokes could be prevented if cholesterol-lowering drugs, statins, were more widely prescribed, according to researchers. The study of 175,000 patients said that even very low-risk patients benefited from the medication. If you do, though, take the supplements, CoQ10. It helps you with the muscle and everything else. A new study finds that coffee drinkers are more likely to live longer. Regular or decaf, it doesn't matter. A study of 400,000 people, largest ever done on the issue, and the results should reassure any coffee lovers who think it's bad for them. No one knows why. Coffee contains 1,000 things that can affect health, from helpful antioxidants to tiny amounts of substances that are linked to cancer. The most widely studied ingredient, caffeine, didn't play a role in the new study results. Researcher and author Christian Wild with us. Christian, first, I want to grab a little comment from you on the statins. where they say give it to healthy people. You agree with that?
They've been trying to do that for about 12 years now. And there's probably some advantages to it, but, you know, most of your listeners by now know what the side effects are in regard to statins, and if you can do it any other way naturally. But the study you just referenced talks about coenzyme Q10. We have been hammering that ever since you and I did our first show together.
All right, now coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker, so chances are a coffee drinker is going to live a little longer than me. How come?
Well, I'll tell you, the executives at Starbucks this morning must be jumping up and down. Huh? You know, I don't think any food or ingestible, George, has had as much controversy through the years as coffee. Is it good for you? Is it bad for you? Well, this study may finally put that debate to rest. And actually, it supports many findings from previous studies. Now, let me just share a few of the benefits
sure.
that have been associated with caffeine. First of all, in answering your question, we all know coffee is a stimulant and therefore increases adrenaline and cortisol levels. Earlier studies have shown that cognitive function, performance, and reaction times are improved among coffee drinkers. You're at your best mentally. You feel I have to have that cup of coffee to get going. Well, ask any college student going through their finals how they could have made it if they didn't have their coffee to give them that edge. Diabetes 2, coffee intake may reduce one's risk of type 2 diabetes by 50%, but those people had to drink, to get that effect, 7 cups a day. Heart disease, 77,000 individuals found that coffee moderately reduced the incidence of dying of heart disease. There is a negative in that, however, and that is that coffee can raise inflammation and then cancer. Coffee consumption reduced the risk of oral, esophageal, and liver and prostate cancer. But let me say on a personal note that if you use brown non-bleach coffee filters in place of the white ones, according to the EPA, you'll do better because those white ones are bleached with chlorine and can result in a lifetime exposure to unacceptable levels of dioxin.
Did not know that. What's new at myheartbook.com, Christian?
Well, a lot of people have been taking advantage of the turmeric, and we're happy to see that. And the results have been pretty outstanding.
Super. Thank you, Christian. We'll be in touch with you. Donna Summer, the queen of disco, has died at the age of 63 in Florida. The news comes as a surprise to those who are not aware that she was even ill. Cancer. The legendary superstar was publicly active as recently as last June when she appeared as a guest panelist on Bravo's music reality show, Platinum Hit. Great singer. Again, we lose another superstar. Donna Summer, dead at the age of 63. Actor Will Smith, I like him, he's a great actor. Well, his son asked President Barack Obama if aliens are real during a visit to the White House. The Men in Black star banned his son, Jaden, from asking that extraterrestrial question ahead of a guided tour of the president's home with his family, but the 13-year-old actor couldn't resist defying his dad. Will Smith was on the BBC, talked about it.
The White House? With my family and we were getting a tour and you know Barack and Michelle and Sasha and Malia and it's me and Jada and the kids and we're walking through the White House and the night before Jaden had said to me Dad I got to ask the president about the aliens you know if we I was like cool. Dude no
yeah,
it's not cool no
it's cool.
It's not cool it's embarrassing
you have to take that opportunity
no you don't
yeah, because he's your son so all you do is go
Jaden, do not ask the president so we get into the situation room and Jaden gets the look in his eyes and he leans over he says Dad what's my punishment and I was like Jaden do not so he looks and you know Barack is talking about the situation room and Jaden says excuse me Mr. President and I was like, hey, Barack, man, hey, listen, Jaden. And Barack said, don't tell me. And in perfect form, like, this is why he's the president. He stopped and looked at Jaden and said, the aliens, right? And I was like, oh, shoot. And he said, okay, I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of extraterrestrials. But I can tell you, if there had been a top secret meeting, and if there would have had to have been a discussion about it, it would have taken place in this room.
Oh!
And Jaden was like, ah!
That Yes.
Big.
He's like, I told you, Dad. I told you it's aliens.
I wonder. Men in Black 3 comes out pretty soon, starring, of course, Will Smith. Up next, Whitley Strieber joins us. We'll get the latest on UFO sightings from him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. You know the name, Whitley Strieber, of course, host, best-selling author, novels of nonfiction, 4 movies have been made from his books. Most recent book out, Solving the Communion Enigma. Welcome to Whitley Strieber on Coast to Coast AM. Whitley, how are you?
Well, it's great to be back, George, as always.
What did you think of President Obama's statement to Will Smith's son about, can neither confirm nor deny the existence of ETs?
It's what you say when you don't want to lie.
Especially to a 13-year-old.
Right. It is, I've heard that before, let me put it that way. And it's generally said when you would like to confirm something, but you can't.
I mean, if they weren't real, and the little kid asked him, do you think he would have just said, nah, come on, that's all?
Yeah, he probably would have.
Interesting.
You know, years ago, we knew Lawrence Rockefeller, who was quite interested in this subject.
Yeah.
And he once told Ann and I a story about having taken Bill and Hillary Clinton, when Bill Clinton was president, to his ranch in Montana. For the purpose of bringing this subject up, he had been involved in creating a book that was distributed to all of the UN delegates and ultimately to every world leader about with all the best UFO cases in it. So he was very involved. He brought it up at dinner, and they very gently changed the subject. And in the next morning, Hillary told him they didn't not want to talk about it. And Bill made a brief reference to it while they were out horseback riding later in the day, saying that it was a very sticky subject and he didn't want to talk about it.
Something's going on.
Oh, sure. Something's going on. Back in, when was it, 1957, Milton Torres, who is still very much alive and in his early 80s, was scrambled when he was a young Air Force officer and told to go up and fire on a UFO, which when he observed it on his radar, he couldn't see it visually because he was in cloud, saw that this thing, as he put it, was the size of an aircraft carrier. Later on, it was claimed, well, what happened in 2008 was this man kept this secret for all these years. Then in 2008, the Ministry of Defense, the British Ministry of Defense, released the story as part of a release of UFO secrets that they were abandoning, and people went to tourists and said, yes, it happened. There was an attempt made to say that a CIA project called Project Palladium, which was designed to throw off false radar signals, was the cause of it, but it turned out this project hadn't even started in 1957, so that wasn't it. And Torres still says to this day he saw an alien spacecraft, a gigantic, awesome thing that was going more than 7,000 miles an hour, and as you put it, the size of an aircraft carrier. Now, fast forward to Stevensville, Texas, a few years ago.
Oh, great case.
Incredible case. And my hat is off to the MUFON investigators who, using Freedom of Information requests, got the FAA's radar tracks from that night. And, of course, they didn't help them at all. They just sent them a great big pile of them. These guys, these people, meticulously put those radar tracks together and proved with the radar tracks that Air Force jets had followed an unidentified flying object in that area that night, and the Air Force base in the area had claimed the next day that it never happened. They were lying. And why were they lying? not because they're mean people, but because they were operating under rules of classification that requires them to lie if confronted about something that is supposed to remain secret. The President of the United States can make his own decision about just how he wants to deal with it.
That's right.
And the decision that Barack Obama made was to tell as much of the truth as he could without violating what he could violate the law. He could say what he wants to say. He's above that. But for whatever reason, he kept it intact and did not disclose did not spill the beans to a 13-year-old kid on a tour of the White House, which is probably not a bad idea.
See, I was told by a lawyer a long time ago, and you're right, Whitley, that when you use that phrase, I can not confirm nor deny, it means that, one, you're not lying to someone, and therefore you're not, for citizens, for example, you're not breaking any laws. You're just not telling them yes, and you're not telling them no. You're protecting yourself.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Now, if you're down somewhere down on the pecking order, you have an obligation to lie. Now, interestingly enough, certain organizations like NASA's charter requires it to disclose to the public. NASA's charter requires it to not keep secrets, but it keeps a great number of secrets.
Sure.
It's been called on the carpet in Congress a number of times about the fact that it keeps secrets. But this thing is a big, big secret. But it's almost, at this point, an open secret, because there is so much going on. And now, with the advent of smartphones and digital cameras and video systems being readily available, you can carry a digital video camera that's practically good enough to put on a movie screen in your pocket at this point. And YouTube and the internet, it's all changing. Unfortunately, along with all of the genuine video that's appearing, and there's a lot of it, there are also a lot of hoaxes. But I guess that's to be expected. Eventually, I always hope to myself, I think to myself, maybe the hoaxers will eventually give up and go away out of boredom. But then I
never.
Maybe it's not hoaxers, just kids playing around. Maybe it's intelligence people trying to confuse the issue on purpose.
And, you know, Whitley, listening to the Will Smith cut, it sounded like the president was ready for that question.
Oh, yeah, of course he was.
Yeah.
A 13-year-old, there isn't one alive in this country who wouldn't ask the president of the United States that question if he had the chance.
I mean, you know what? If I were doing an interview with President Barack Obama about everything, wars, economy, and everything, I'd want to ask him about that.
Of course. Me too. Yeah. Anyone would. I'm not so sure presidents know all that much about it.
I agree with you.
I had a very interesting conversation with Jackie Gleason's wife. Unfortunately, my case didn't come to light until after Gleason himself had passed away. But she talked to me about what had happened between him and Dick Nixon, which was extraordinary.
And this was relayed, I assume, from Gleason to her, right?
To her, yeah. Well, to his wife, of course. And he had told her that, you know, Gleason was very interested in UFOs, and he was also a good friend of Nixon's. And he brought the subject up with Nixon, and Nixon took him to an airbase in Florida and actually showed him these objects that were housed there in a off-limits hangar. And Gleason described them in detail and reported them, and I understood. Now, I'm not sure whether this is true. It's just a rumor as far as I know, that after that happened, presidents were no longer given as extensive a briefing about this as they had been before. They were essentially told, it's something very difficult and very sticky.
That's a good point. Whitley, stay with us. We're coming back. You're with us for 2 hours. We're going to talk about some recent UFO sightings around the world. Whitley Strieber with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Whitley Strieber. Whitley, before we get into some of these UFO stories here, how's Roger Lear doing? I talked to him a few months ago when he was in the hospital. What's going on with him?
Well, Roger's a lot better.
Good.
Number one, and to keep up with what is happening in his life, listeners should go to alienscalpel.com, his website. He's obviously suffering financially, and there's something that's been developed called the Roger Lear Trust, which I have made a contribution to. And
okay, good.
So that's there. But there's the most interesting thing is this. He had, and I'm hoping he'll come on Coast when he's ready, quite a phenomenal experience during the surgery when he was in the hospital that it was some kind of an encounter. He has explained it to me, and he can talk about it very articulately.
Not a near-death experience.
No. It was more like a close encounter. But what's fascinating to me about it is this. And we've got this huge number of cases, and as soon as my wife, Ann, heard this, she said, well, you know, there's another case like that. Of a soldier who had been had a terminal cancer because he had been exposed to Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. So some years later, mm-hmm. he was in the hospital, and they were going to do an emergency surgery, but they were telling him they wouldn't be able to get it all. And while he was waiting on the gurney, ready to be taken into the operating room, what he described as grays showed up and did something to him. They took him into the operating room and opened him up, and he had no cancer, still alive to this day. Jeez. So that kind of thing happens. Weird stuff like that. Something like that happened to Roger Lear.
Okay, yeah. Look forward to finding out about that. And also your Dreamland Festival, I'm told it's sold out. Is that?
Oh, yeah, it is. It sells out every year. It sold out a couple of weeks ago, or a week and a half ago. Yeah, it's going to be in Nashville this weekend, and I think we're going to have a very exciting time. I wish that I could say that there were tickets available, but it's not true. There aren't.
Well, sometimes that's a good thing to be able to not say.
Yeah, well, we keep it small. It's a very intimate experience, and, you know, it's a lot of the people have been going since it began, and, you know, about half the seats fill up immediately.
Pretty fast, yeah, with those people.
But it's a wonderful time, and I'm thinking about either extending it to have more than one a year or maybe making it bigger or something so more people can...
Yeah, you should make it bigger, I think. Hey, what's going on in the world of UFO sightings right now?
Well, I've been, you know, I had a huge UFO sighting last week.
You did?
I did. The first time since anything like that's happened to me since 2007. I'll get into that in a little bit, but it started me on a search to find out, you know, am I alone, or did this just happen to me? Are UFO sightings up? And what I found was this, that there are really an enormous number, actually, of cases that aren't hoaxes and don't add up around the world now, so many that they have become ordinary.
Right.
And if you get an infrared sensitive camera, and in certain areas of this country, like around San Diego, you point it at the sky, and apparently you just see these things flying back and forth all the time.
You know, Ed Grimsley took me to the top of a hotel at a conference I was at a few years ago with his night vision goggles, Generation 3, and I got to tell you, Whitley, I was a skeptic with Ed Grimsley until he brought me up there, and I saw two objects darting, making these 90-degree maneuvers. Planes don't do that.
No.
Satellites don't do that. Bugs don't do that. And it was just an incredible, incredible thing. And he you know, he would grab the glasses from me, and he'd look, and he'd go, yep, that's what it is. They're up about 200 miles. And now you're going to see it stop, George, and then it'll take off again. And he gives me the glasses back. I look up there. Sure enough, it's darting across the sky. It stops. It looks just like a star. And it picks up and makes a, you know, a 90-degree turn, and off it goes. It was amazing.
That is quite extraordinary. But the thing is that it's now part of ordinary life. The only thing missing is that our government, our intellectuals, our scientists, and most of the media, except this one little corner of the media, not so little, actually, the big corner of the media, coast to AM, ignores it, pretends it's not true. And as far as the media is concerned, every 3 months, it's all new. They've got another group of 14-year-olds in there running the show, and they have absolutely no idea of what happened in the past.
Well, I wonder if anyone other than the BBC and us, and you, of course, will pick up on this President Barack Obama story where he said this. You know, he said this, you know, Will Smith made the statement on the BBC, so they had the story. But it's an incredible story. I'm just wondering, you know, if the major mainstream, the network, CBS, CNN, Fox, will pick this
up. The two extremes, the Huffington Post and Fox News, sort of the right-wing mouth voice and the left-wing voice, mm-hmm. are the ones who pick up on it most consistently.
Yeah.
Lee Siegel on Huffington Post.
Oh, he's great.
Does a great job.
Yeah.
Not a fascinating guy.
He really is. But this will be interesting to see tomorrow or the next day if they start picking up on this.
But, you know, the things like the newspaper of record, the New York Times, will never treat this in any kind of a coherent way. They haven't. The last UFO stories that they published that were at all open-minded about this were back in the 70s. And they absolutely will not deal with it. And I think it's because they've got some of the best reporters in the world on that. And these people look at it, and they realize, yeah, there is something to this. And then they realize the next thing that comes to their minds is this newspaper has made a commitment that this is all nonsense that goes back 40 years. We can't change it. We've made mm-hmm. our bed. We will destroy the credibility of the institution if we say anything other than what we've been saying. And so they go on, hoping that the secrecy will remain. And you have to ask yourself a question. Our government's very secretive. Our scientists choose not to deal with it. Our media the media of record won't deal with it. Why don't the visitors do something? The answer is the secrecy has to start there.
That's
with
right.
them. That's where it starts. And when the President of the United States says, he can't confirm or deny, it's not because somebody below his level has told him to keep his mouth shut. It's because it comes from above him.
I agree with that. There's that shadow government. There's that higher up, that elitist group that is pulling the strings here.
Somebody's there. And, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if ultimately whoever our visitors are, they'd rather not be bothered with us asking him too many questions.
Well, you know, the president might get a call, if he hasn't already, from someone who says, why did you say that? You know, why did you just say no?
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, they're always the disclosure people. They come out and, you know, and I would love to see this. I would love to see disclosure. Don't get me wrong. But I always say to these gentlemen that I don't think it'll ever happen.
I don't either.
For the reason.
I tell Steve Bassett that all the time.
I do too. I tell Steve Bassett that. I said that to Dr. Greer as well. Because how can it? How can the President of the United States say, or even have someone at a mid-level in NASA say, we believe some of these objects may be intelligently guided? Because two questions later, it's, what about the people who are having abduction experiences?
That's right. Inductions? Why did you not tell us the truth
right.
before?
And speaking of Roger Lear, then all of a sudden the implants, which everyone completely ignores,
all these people completely ignore, become a huge cause celeb. And here's this guy saying, yeah, sure, I take them out of people all the time.
Right.
They emit FM signals. They're magnetic. They're encased in the person's skin and then buried in muscle tissue. The government isn't going to survive that.
And you've still got one near your ear, don't you?
In my ear, absolutely. It was attempted to be taken out many years ago. And when it moved and avoided capture by the doctor down into the bottom of my, into my earlobe, and he sewed up the injury, the incision.
Yeah.
Then 2 days later, it moved back, and then he calls me, and he says the pathologist called and said that this thing, I mean, pathologists, normally they send a written report.
They had a little piece, right, or something?
He cut off a little piece, and the pathologist called him and told him it was the strangest thing he'd ever seen. The little piece was not organic entirely. It was a manufactured object. The base of it was metal, and there were cilia growing out of it that were alive. And, George, you get something like that in your ear, and you realize it's there.
Well, and when that happens, Whitley, do you take a moment? Now, you might not, but how many people would say, now, I've got to think, did I ever get into some accident when I was a kid?
No, I was awake when it happened. I remember when it was put in very well.
Wow.
Oh, sure. And it wasn't put in by aliens either. There were two people who did it, a man and a woman. I saw them come right into my bedroom in the night.
Well, you were sleeping?
I wasn't sleeping. I was awake.
You were awake?
Yeah, I was half awake. I heard a car. We had a gravel driveway. The windows were open. It was a May night. It was warm. And I was sort of dozing. I wasn't really asleep yet. It was about midnight. The alarm system was on. The shotgun was under the bed, loaded shotgun.
Ready to go.
Benelli riot gun. I mean, it was a serious shotgun. There was a pistol in the drawer. There was a bank of switches beside the bed where I could reach over and turn them all on at once and flood the entire house with light outside. All that was there. And I'm lying there. We've got a locked gate down the road. And suddenly I hear the crunching of gravel in the driveway. Only one thing could make that noise: tires.
Yeah.
No light out there. And yeah, I had been just about to doze off, but when I heard that, no dose. Then I hear coming from the backyard a male voice say, "Condition red." I open my eyes. I sit up, and standing at the foot of the bed, just across, just down in the middle of the bedroom, are a man and a woman.
Were you petrified?
No, I had one thought. I'm going for the gun.
Of course.
No, when I heard, let me go back. When I heard the gravel, my thought was, I'm going for the lights. Then when I heard the voice and saw the people a second later, I'm going for the gun.
Did you?
Of course. But the next thing I knew, I was lying on my side. I couldn't see. I could not move a muscle. And they were, some one of them, the woman's voice, I could hear her voice, and it was speaking very soothingly. I don't remember the words she said.
And these are human beings. Okay.
Absolutely. One of them was pressing on my head in waves, so there was pressure hitting my head in waves. And then a few moments later, they were gone. That ended. I leaped up out of bed. I heard crashing in the woods, like someone running wildly through the woods. I turned on all the lights, all the outside lights, grabbed the, might have been the shotgun, but yeah, one of the two guns anyway, went off through the house looking for some entry point. There was no entry point. And so finally, I didn't sleep much that night, but I stayed in bed and stayed in the bedroom basically with a gun in my hand.
Did you realize at that point you were zapped with the implant?
No. Okay. I didn't. I had no idea that had happened. I didn't know exactly what had happened.
They must have put you out with some kind of an injection or something.
No. I think it was done hypnotically. I don't think it was an injection. I had no sense of any kind. It could have been, I guess, George. I don't know. But anyway, the next morning, We get up. I tell my wife about this. And by that time, you know, I'm not a person who's easily buys into this. And that's never been good for me. I should have been more open to it for a long time. Anyway, by then I'm saying it's probably some kind of a nightmare. All right.
Well, you would think that, yeah.
Well, I always think that, even when obviously it's not.
Even when you're up with a gun in your
right, hand. I should have called the cops or something. But in any case, I think that. So I get in the car to go out to the car's in a garage that's attached garage. I go out in the attached garage, get in the car to go out and get the newspaper. The garage door is open. And what's strange is the alarm system is still on. I was going to turn it off in the garage as I walked out. So obviously something weird's going on because
yeah.
You're looking at the alarm system LEDs bright red and the garage door, which is alarmed, is wide open.
And no alarm has gone off,
no.
Even when they were in the house.
No. So I turn off the alarm system, back the car out, and I'm getting shocked in the car. The car is like my hair standing on end. The car is full of some kind of electricity. So I jump out of the car, and I call the guy. I go back in the house. I say to my wife, there's something weird happened last night. I call the alarm guy. He comes over. He finds a magnetic field around the switch that can't exist because you don't create a magnetic field out of nothing. In other words, you don't have a magnetic field needs an electromagnet to maintain it, or a magnet of some kind to make powerful magnet
sure.
to maintain it. There's a powerful magnetic field around this switch, which is unexplained. And he finally takes out the switch and the whole mechanism and replaces it. It works fine again. But the point is this. Whoever came into that house defeated the alarm system with some kind of a magnetic energy that we don't even have and put this thing in my ear. For years after that, it used to go off. I used to go to see the head of materials science at Southwest Research in San Antonio, Dr. William Mallow, who was fascinated with this thing. It went off once while I was talking to him in his office. My ear turns red. It gets hot. I can hear a noise in there in the ear. And I say to him, Bill, it's turned on. He says, I can see. We rush into a signals lab, and they tell us that it's not emitting any kind of signal that they can detect. Of course, later, the head of the organization told Bill, he said, you know, that our CIA client takes a dim view of UFO research, and that's half their budget. So who knows what really... whether they acquire a signal or not.
How many people do you think this is happening to?
Implants?
Yeah.
Plenty.
Way more than we know.
Oh, sure. Many. Elier probably has hundreds of good cases that he can't deal with because he hasn't got the resources. And here's the thing. In my book, in the latest book, Solving the Communion Enigma, I have an entire chapter on exactly what the scientific community needs to do and can do with the existing evidence to get a handle on what UFOs are, on what is happening to people, and what implants are. It doesn't require any kind of leap of faith. It's all based on physical evidence and an entire, enormous, well-funded, and brilliant community from Stephen Hawking on down sits on its hands and won't touch this. This they laugh at. And that is a profound human failure.
It sure is. It sure is. And do you think there's a distinct difference between the human implants, what happened to you, and alien implants?
Well, whatever was put in my ear was very advanced. And how do we know that everybody from other worlds are some of them don't look perfectly human?
Well, that's a good point.
Stay
with us. Hold on, Whitley. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take phone calls and continue talking about this. Alien implants on Coast to Coast AM.